Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Here in our office, there's a moment from the NBC sitcom 30 Rock that comes up every now and then. It's an episode where the television personality Tracy Jordan, played by actor Tracy Morgan, is trying to win all four major awards in entertainment, an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony. It's a career achievement known by the acronym EGOT. So Tracy does some research, and he realizes the fastest way to an EGOT is to write a song, one that will top the charts, and then make its way to TV, film, and Broadway.
All I have to do is create the most popular song of all time.
What a great idea, and so simple. So Tracy Jordan enlists the help of a rock band, a hip-hop DJ, a mariachi group, a jazz singer, and because he doesn't really understand what country music is, a lone cowbell player. The idea is to incorporate as many genres as possible for maximum marketability.
People.
Love song. About love and cars. I've started already.
Stop! It's all wrong! How could five of the most popular musical styles all played at once sound so bad?
Mr. Jordan, I'm not sure you've thought this through.
Okay, here's why we love this bit from 30 Rock here at Soundcheck. Because fusing musical styles is easier said than done. Believe me, we've heard lots of examples where it just goes right off the rails. But when it's done well, the results should sound effortless. In a moment, we'll get a visit from composer and pianist Arturo O'Farrell. He'll talk about drawing from the musical traditions of Puerto Rico, Africa, and Central Park. How does it sound? Well, you can judge for yourself, because Arturo has brought the entire Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra, all 20 players, to play live. It's the biggest band we've ever had in the Soundcheck studio, and you won't want to miss it. But first, let's talk about another group that combined two very different styles. Fans of Celtic music and fans of punk didn't really have too much in common until the Pogues came along. A punk band with mandolins and accordion, and a singer who straddled both worlds, the magnetic, if often troubled, Shane McGowan. An account of the Pogues' wobbly rise to pop stardom and a few blurry tours thrown in as well is told in a recent memoir by James Fernley. He plays accordion for the Pogues, and his book is called Here Comes Everybody, The Story of the Pogues. He joins me here in the Soundcheck studio. James, welcome.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
So the book actually opens with you and most of the rest of the Pogues kicking Shane out of the band. You're in Japan, 1991, and Shane's response is, "You've been very patient with me. What took you so long?"
Well, it's that question that sort of kicks off the whole book, and I suppose in some sense it's the book is my attempt to answer the question, what took us so long?
You first meet Shane McGowan when he's going under the name Shane O'Hooligan.
Yeah.
So you had a warning sign right away of what you were getting into.
I suppose I did. I mean, I'd seen his name in the press quite a bit, in the Melody Maker and the NME, and you know, like, kind of curious as to somebody who could have a name like that. When I turned up for the audition for his band, The Nips,
yeah.
Back in 1980, I was the fifth guitarist that they had, and there was the tenth drummer in the room. And it took me a little while to twig who he was. A guy so full of charisma from the set-off, really, slouching, unattachable. I was just lucky to be able to play the right stuff.
And the audition revolves around you going from the studio to the pub, back to the studio, back to the pub to finally get the work. So, you know, pubs have an important role to play in the story of the Pogues
and in English culture generally.
Absolutely.
Indeed.
His first question to you is something along the lines of, can you play disconnected shards of industrial noise?
That's right. So those where he says that exact words, I'm not making it up. And and I'd been going to auditions around London for quite a bit and playing all sorts of stuff, like from Soul here, and but you just do anything that they ask you to do as best as you can.
So if Shane had had, say, Throbbing Gristle in mind when he asked you that question, it must have been a surprise when you finally got the gig and ended up playing music like, say, Boys from County Hell, which is not disconnected shards of industrial noise.
No, it's not. There was a year and a half gap between the end of the Nips where I rededicated myself to writing, and I wanted to write a novel, and I set myself up in my flat in Mornington Crescent, and I had a sign on the wall next to my bed which just had the words "Get Up" on it. So that's what I did every day and wrote. And then a year and a half later, after I'd sold my guitar and my amp, that Jem Finer, the Pogues banjo player, came to visit me, and he had an accordion that he'd borrowed from somebody in a laundry bag. And he said the way that he found me was he knew the building where I was, and he went to each floor listening for the typewriter and then homed in on the flat that I was living in from the typewriter noise.
And his idea was, well, you had piano lessons as a kid. Surely you must be able to play the accordion. Let's hear my guest, James Fearnley, playing the accordion with the band The Pogues from their 1984 record called Red Roses for Me. The song is Boys from County Hell.
Let's sit and watch the junkies and drunks up in stores. Five green bottles sitting on the floor. I wish to Christ that I had 50 more. And it's lend me £10. Oh boy, you a drink. And mother, wake me early in the morning. And it's lend me £10. Oh boy, you a drink. And mother, wake me early in the morning. The boys and me are drunk and looking for you. We'll eat your friggin' entrails and we won't give a damn. Me daddy was a bloodshed and my mother a madame. My brother earned his medals at my lay in Vietnam. And it's lent me £10 for five.
The Pogues from their album Red Roses for Me, 1984 recording Boys from County Hell. Shane McGowan singing, James Fearnley playing the accordion. James is the author of the book newly released here in the States called Here Comes Everybody, The Story of the Pogues. Here Comes Everybody.
Oh, I nicked it.
From
James Joyce.
From Finnegan's Wake.
Yeah, indeed. I think it's like one of the sketches that formed the basis of large sections of Finnegan's Wake. I can't say that I've read all of Finnegan's Wake, but I've read bits of it, and I spent a bit of time unearthing recordings of James Joyce reading from it, which is really interesting.
He's got a very musical. I mean,
because he was a tenor singer himself. Yeah.
So Red Roses for Me is the name of a Sean O'Casey play.
And a song.
And then there's the name of the band, The Pogues, which is a shortened form of the Gaelic expression Pog Mahon.
Yes.
Kiss my arse.
That's quite a refined pronunciation. I've not heard that kind of pronunciation before, but well done. Back in the day, there was a Radio 1 disc jockey, Canadian guy called Kid Jensen, who championed us. We're forever grateful to that guy because he just took us on and played the record, the first couple of singles, quite a lot, until BBC Radio Scotland rang up to say, every time you say Pog Mahon, or Pog Mahon, as you say, over the airwaves, you were basically saying kiss my ass to a lot of Gaelic speakers. So Kid Jensen shortened it to The Pogues.
So how much, Shane McGowan, you know, coming from this large London Irish community, you know, he had a lot of kind of pro-Republican sentiment that he would occasionally try and weave into the songs.
Yeah.
How much friction did that cause with members of the band who were trying to keep politics out of it?
Well, I think the politics, as far as we were concerned, we tried to keep to an individual level rather than to go out and make a statement. Mm-hmm. About what we thought of the, you know, the separation of Northern and the Republic and everything. I think, above all, Shane's songs are to do with individuals for the most part, except you get to a song like Birmingham 6, which took on that and made it a general statement about being Irish in the wrong place and at the wrong time.
There were 6 women in Birmingham and guilt for this far. They were picked up and tortured and framed by the law. And the film got promotion, but they're still doing time for being Irish in the wrong place and at the wrong time. In Ireland they'll put you away in the maze. In England they'll keep you for some grand days. God help you if ever you caught on these shores. The coppers need someone and they walk through that door. You'll be counting years for 5 and 10. Growing old in a lonely hell. Round the yard in a stinking cell. From wall to wall and back again. Across the night judges.
Did people think you were Irish because you were up there with an accordion?
Not necessarily, because I think it was assumed that we were all Irish, and it's that assumption still persists today. And Fernley has been mistaken for an Irish
name. It looks like an Irish name.
It looks like an Irish name. So, but as I was telling you before, it's actually Viking.
Is that a Norse name?
Yeah.
But in 1987, you guys did the Irish Rover with the Dubliners.
Yeah, no, that's like a summit meeting in a sense. Well, not maybe a summit meeting.
A meeting of two generations.
Because they were our fathers in a sense, musically speaking. It was great to work with those guys. Lovely blokes. I'm sorry that that most of them are dead. It's only John Sheehan from the original Dubliners that's still alive.
Well, we'll get to hear both bands, the Dubliners and the Pogues, in this 1987 recording of the Irish Rover.
On the 4th of July, 1806, we set sail from the sweet home of Cork. We were sailing away with a cargo of bricks for the Grand City Hall in New York. 'Twas a wonderful craft, she was rigged for the laugh. You know how the wild wind drove her. She stood several blasts, she had 27 masts, and they called her the Irish Rover.
We had 1 million bags of the best lawyer rags. We had 2 million barrels of stone. We had 3 million sides of our blind horses' hides. We had 4 million barrels of bones. We had 5 million hogs, 6 million doves, 7 million barrels of porter. We had 8 million piles of old Nanny Goss tiles and a whole of the Irish Rover.
That is a musical meeting of the Pogues and the Dubliners. 1987, the song The Irish Rover. On Soundcheck today, we're speaking with James Fernley, the longtime accordion player for the band The Pogues, and we're talking about his book just out here in the States called Here Comes Everybody, The Story of the Pogues. James is doing events actually with some other musicians.
Yes, indeed.
Here in town. Yeah. Friday the 16th at Community Bookstore. Saturday the 17th at the Cabinet of Wonders across the street from our studio at City Winery. That's the sort of monthly music and storytelling and variety show put together by Wesley Stace. That's Saturday the 17th. And then Monday the 19th at McNally Jackson Bookstore on Prince Street here in Lower Manhattan. Your father once said, "I'm afraid your singer is a moron. If you stick with him, you're sunk."
Oh, God, no. He was so conflicted, because it was something that he had wanted to do similarly. And he wanted to give me advice, the same advice that his father had given to, to him, but equally was proud that I'd just gone off and did it.
On the other hand, it wasn't hard to see that Shane McGowan was going to be trouble. In fact, you very early on in the book are pouring him into his flat, you know, wherever he's living, you know.
Yeah.
So, as I said before, you had a lot of early warning signs of what was to come.
Well, so there were. But then at the same time, that when we went on tour with Elvis Costello in 1984, which was our first kind of experience of getting into the minivan and travelling, there was a lot of drink involved, but it was kind of
fraternal.
Yeah, and there was a kind of hilarity about it, and a freedom, and the music went with it, and the travelling, and we didn't really have very much work to do. We just had to get there and then crash through our set as best as we could in half an hour, and then just go on the tear. And there was such a kind of joy about doing that maybe some of the warning signs kind of got submerged in the streams of whiskey as it were.
Well, now the band managed to, you know, get it together to do these tours, to do a couple of great albums. Many of us Pogues fans consider Rum, Sodomy and the Lash to be a high water mark for the band.
Yeah.
And here again, we have Shane sort of referencing Irish culture, and in this case, the myth of Cuchulainn, the great Irish warrior, in a song called Sickbed of Cuchulainn.
They used in tavern, you screamed it was your shell, but I wouldn't give you service, so you kicked the windows out. They took you out into the street, kicked you in the brains, so you walked back then through a bolted door and did it all again. And a sick bed of Cuchulainn will kneel and say a prayer, and the ghosts are rattling at the door, and the devil's in the chair. Hey! Remember that foul evening when you heard the banshees howl? There was lazy, drunken bastards singing Billy in the Bell. They took you up to midnight mass and left you in the lurch. So you dropped a button in the plate and spewed up in the church.
Little bit of Sickbed of Cuchulainn from the Pogues album Rum, Sodomy and the Lash from 1985. James Fearnley playing the accordion there, and he is the author of the newly issued book Here Comes Everybody, The Story of the Pogues, out now here in the States for the first time, and basically giving us the story, the sort of the creation myth of
interesting way of looking at it. Yeah, from the chaos and eros flying over it and, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Well, and also you are someone who has spent time writing fiction, and you don't call this a biography, you call this a memoir. And, you know,
Well, it's about, if it's a memoir, it's about me, I suppose. I kept diaries. Well, funnily enough, I started diary writing maybe just like the year before the Pogues started up. And most of the diaries actually concerned with a relationship that I was having with a girl at the time. But the Pogues creep into it. And then when the Pogues started up, the Pogues kind of took it over. Mm-hmm. And I was like the nerd for a lot of the time in the band. I can imagine the guys coming down to the hotel room and there's, you know, James is already up and he's writing in his tiny little minuscule spidery script, you know, what they've all been saying. And I kept a notebook which I wrote down things. So that's where most of the material comes from.
And as we mentioned before, it ends in 1991 with the firing of Shane McGowan from the band.
Yeah.
The band reconvenes in 2001.
Yeah.
Shane sort of officially rejoins the band. Will there be a second volume? Are you still on speaking terms with all these guys after this book?
Well, I can't say that the book hasn't changed the dynamic a bit. And the reactions to the book have ranged from, I suppose, horror might be a good word, or panic, maybe, and a little bit of hatred mixed in with it, possibly. And on the other hand, I actually got proofreading help from a couple of them. It was pointed out to me that I use the word pellucid too many times. So I took a few instances of that out as well.
Okay,
but then I think things come down to settle, because there's a bond between us that is resilient to the point of never, I don't think, ever going away.
No.
As
several people point out to you during the course of the book, you know, you spend more time with the band and with Shane, et cetera, than you did with your own family.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
The book is called Here Comes Everybody, The Story of the Pogues by James Fearnley, longtime accordion player for the band. And you can catch him Friday night, the 16th, at Community Bookstore, 7 p.m., or Saturday night at the variety show known as Cabinet of Wonders at the City Winery. Or Monday night, the 19th, at McNally Jackson Bookstore on Prince Street, with a live band at each of these occasions. And James, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
James Fearnley on Soundcheck. Up next, composer and pianist Arturo O'Farrell brings the entire Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra to our studio. 20 people cramming in here for a live performance. And later, our series That Was a Hit gets turned upside down as we hear about an influential song that surprisingly was not a hit when it was first released. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The Grammy-winning Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra has just released its fourth album called The Offense of the Drum. Led by pianist Arturo O'Farrell, the ALJO keeps alive the great Latin jazz tradition of the mid-20th century when Dizzy Gillespie and Chano Pozo, Charlie Parker and Machito, and Arturo's dad, Chico O'Farrell, were all major figures in American music. But the band also extends that tradition. For example, this first song they're going to play for us features the entire orchestra, yes, all 18 members, plus guest vocalist Chilo and DJ Logic. The song's called They Came. Here is Arturo O'Farrell and the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra improbably squeezing into our Soundcheck studio to play live.
They came. They came from the land of Borinquen, where caciques once ruled, the coquis cried, and the parrots flew, speaking Taino in canoes, eating guava and yuca under the sunshine. From the lands that conquistadors conquered, carving new cultures, carrying Africans that brought bomba, where saints doubled as orishas, hundreds of years of assimilated ethnic mixing in their bloodstreams, sweat, tears, and pain, toiling in the sugar cane, they came. Hibaros working coffee plantations, where cuatros, congas, cowbells, and claves called out into the night. From the forts of El Moro to the rainforests of Ajuque, they came, screaming in lattes, grabbing guidos and playing planar rhythms into tomorrow. They came, some earlier than others, names like Lola, Betances, Hostos, and Schomburg, humans with their hearts full of independence and education. They came amidst the U.S. invasions, When our island was ceded from Spain, they came. When the Jones Act made them citizens so that they could be drafted in their wars, they fought. In every major war since for this country, even though they couldn't and still can't vote for the president, they fought. Puerto Ricans in New York named Julian Jesus, a maestro named Albizu, helping to write the Irish Constitution. They waited, naturalized and stigmatized with their West Side stories, wanting to live in America, looking for milk and honey, settling for pigeon soup and shining shoes, putting the machete down and strapping on their boots for operations, leaving their island while manufacturers moved in for tax exemptions. Lab rats and cancer experiments. They came to the factories of the metropolis, to the farm fields of this country, doing the jobs that nobody else wanted, dishwashing and dancing with discrimination, breaking down language barriers, sofrito in their souls, praising Dios for another day. They came to the streets of Brooklyn and the Bronx, East Harlem and the Lower East Side. They strived. They are still here. We are here in the form of superheroes like Mr. October and Clemente, winning World Series rings and helping to integrate America, leaving imprints with their music, Raphaels and Roots, Hectors, Titos and Willies, Jose's, Reyes, Andes and Ismael's, Cepeda's y Gran Combos, banging on goatskin, keeping alive tradition from the Congo. Young lords with programs and platforms, poets using words to start movements, Papalecos, Pires, and Pedros, Miguel, Sandras, Bimbos, and Tatos, leaving legacies with letters that will last forever. We were there when hip-hop began, Boricuas breaking in the Bronx and Park Jams, where Herc and Nevada had to speak loud. Who you think you there out in the crowd? Ruby D and Disco Wiz, the Charlie Chases and the Whipple Whips, Devil Snow Tito when the field is full, Crazy Red Rocks and Tony Touch and more, Randy K and TKA, freestyle to the illest rap writers of the game. They came, they came, they came, they came, they came from the island, the flags and the windows of the streets. They reside in Division and Chi-Town, New York City, Massachusetts, Florida, Jersey to Philly, Hawaii to Hartford. Yeah, we all over. Even seen a bombazo in Minnesota. We can't buy that to sepa. We know how to party, let it on forever. We are the rainbow people, no lies. Skin darker than the night, our eyes bluer than the sky. Say things like Vito, pobrecito, catch us on the corner by the cuchillito. On holidays, pouring out coquito. She said we peaceful, she said we loquito. Playing dominoes and eating pasteles, winning Olympic gold medals in tennis. Speaking out against the Navy bombings, how they turn our ancestral lands so toxic. Super fun sight in the Sioux, sad to watch. Corrupt politicians, corporations and pockets. Large part of my people still in poverty, protesting imperialistic policies. We are here. We go into space, become Supreme Court justices, and climb statues of liberty. We are Big Pun platinum raps and Basquiat paintings on your walls. Rita Moreno winning an Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and a Tony. Shaking maracas, giving out cocotazos and guacatas and aguayaberas. We are Berea in the NBA championship and Victor Cruz doing our salsa in the Super Bowl. We are Sixto, Cotto, Trinidad and Camacho. More than tourism, targeted advertisement and exploitation for pharmaceutical companies. Rushing all 5 centuries of colonization, working how we work, singing our songs, and no clever sight can ever right these wrongs. But we are here and we're still hating. Stop it, stupid. There's no way you can deny our contributions. We are life with the sun and passion unlimited. Don't ever let them tell you otherwise. There's not enough words in the world to express the love I have for the infinite. Arturo O'Farro and the Afro Latin Jazz Orchestra, ladies and gentlemen, TJ Live.
Roger. Bobby Porcelli on the saxophone. Boricuas, presente, pa'lante siempre. And we came, we saw, we are here, and we ain't going nowhere. Thank you.
Thank you. That is Arturo O'Farrell and the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra live in a jam-packed soundcheck studio. Song called They Came features vocals by Chilo and turntablism from DJ Logic playing with the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. And that song appears on the band's brand new album just out called The Offense of the Drum. Arturo, to you and the orchestra, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here, as always. It's a great thrill.
That song actually, you know, the title implies a journey. They came.
Yeah.
And it kind of takes us on a journey. There, you get into a bit of a reggaeton sort of groove towards the end.
Maybe a first. Reggaeton jazz. I'm not sure. But remember, you heard it here first.
Celebrating the many contributions to American culture by people who came from Puerto Rico.
And it's funny because it also mirrors the same struggles that immigrants have brought to the United States and the victories and the triumphs that have been taking place throughout time here.
Right. So you could substitute Puerto Rican for African, for Irish, for Italian, you know, for every wave of immigrants who've come here.
Well, that's kind of the beautiful thing about New York is that there's always a struggler who becomes victorious, and the next struggler becomes victorious, and it's a beautiful New York story.
Yeah. Now, explain the title of the album, The Offense of the Drum. What is offensive about the drum?
The drum itself is not offensive. It's in the hands of the people who misuse or use it properly that it becomes a tool, becomes a political weapon. It becomes a religious tool. This originally became a concept to me because I remember during a particularly harsh mayoral administration, drummers were booted from Central Park and from Marcus Garvey Park. In fact, some of them were arrested and their drums confiscated. And it freaked me out that the drum was seen as a potentially violent political weapon.
Mm.
So much so that the police arrested these folks.
Well, now, you and I both live near Prospect Park, where on a weekend morning you can hear some of those drum circles from miles away, and it's a beautiful thing.
I grew up with that sound, man. I mean, I can't tell you, walking through the park as an 11-year-old, boom, doom, doom, boom. I mean, that stuff is like ingrained in your blood if you're from New York.
So the idea that the drum can be an instrument of fighting oppression, you know, that's an idea that, you know, goes back to the time of slavery here in the United States. And I'm sure you can find lots of examples of it elsewhere in the world as well. You do a lot of music education. When you tell kids that, does that get them excited, the idea of music as something subversive like that?
I think it's so. I think it's also a beautiful metaphor for the rhythms inside our lives. We're supposed to be activists. Every single human being is supposed to be an activist. We're supposed to care about our communities, and we're supposed to speak out when we see wrong things, and kids understand that. By nature, they understand that. And so when I tell them that the drum is an extension of their heartbeat, to use their lives and to use their drums as ways of speaking out and when things need to be spoken out against or for.
Mm-hmm. So is that why the current album from the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra actually has so much more than just Latin jazz drums and percussion instruments? You got stuff from all over the world.
Well, I think that Latin jazz has kind of gotten boxed in a little bit, and I feel like, man, I love to learn about rhythms from Peru, from Colombia, from the Pacifico. I mean, we're, you know, I like to have my butt kicked, man. I like to learn about things I have no knowledge of and get stretched and grow as a musician. And I think that so much of what we call Latin jazz, and actually some of what we call jazz, has become so conservative and so straight-laced, man. I can't wait to play music I can't play well and to learn how to play it well. So that's why, for me, the journey is never ending. It just never ends, man. It's an infinite ocean of things that I can't do.
Yeah. He said proudly. Two things Arturo can do: play the piano, lead the band, the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. The new album's called The Offense of the Drum. It is just out. And on Saturday night, the band is playing at the legendary Apollo Theater to mark two anniversaries. It's the 80th anniversary of the Apollo and the 65th anniversary, Arturo, of your dad's Afro-Cuban Jazz Suite, Chico O'Farrell's Afro-Cuban Jazz Suite.
Playing the Apollo is, man, I have a grainy photograph of my father standing under the marquee with his name. So it's like, it's just so beautiful, man. Yeah. It's just a moving experience. But it's, you know, it's funny because I'm not replicating the Afro-Cuban Jazz Suite. I'm taking the spirit of my father. My father was a restless adjutant. He kept stretching the dimensions of what people expected Latin jazz to be.
But it is still the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra that we're talking about and that has crammed itself into the studio today. The album's called The Offense of the Drum, brand new, out now. Let's hear another song. This one is called Mercado en Domingo, a market on Sunday.
Thank you.
Arturo O'Farrell and the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra with guest DJ Logic on turntables live in the Soundcheck studio in a song called Mercado en Domingo, Sunday Market. I've been wasting my Sunday mornings playing soccer. I should be going. I had no idea the market was such a happening place.
It's a crazy scene. All kinds of colors and all kinds of stuff. Fruit.
So, does, I mean, the ALJO, is this a repertory orchestra? I mean, do you do old charts from your dad, from Chano Pozo or Machito or Bausa or any of those people?
We do. I don't consider ourselves a repertory orchestra because we don't consistently play nothing but the classic canon of our we think it's very important to keep it alive. But even in the beginnings of this orchestra, I determined that playing the canon was foolhardy if you didn't bring something of contemporary aesthetic to it.
Well, you know, there's on the record is called The Offense of the Drum, and it is a lot of newly written music, but you end the record with Iko Iko, the Mardi Gras anthem,
yeah.
Which, you know, this sort of goes back to what you were talking about with the drum being a kind of instrument of expression for people who are being oppressed. I mean, the whole Mardi Gras Indian thing and the music that goes with it, I mean, that's the sound of an oppressed people finding a means of expression.
It's amazing to me because, I mean, for me, New Orleans, I think every musician in the world should go and spend time in New Orleans. It's an incredible place. And it's in New Orleans that we realize that, first of all, New Orleans is no longer America, let's face it. It's part of Africa. It's part of South America.
It's part of the Caribbean.
And, in fact, if you go there, you really understand the common roots of all our music. And I think that the drum is incredibly powerful in New Orleans. And you know what else is amazing to me? The drum, the hand drum, is very important to the people and to the music of New Orleans. People still, I mean, you can't have this music without touching skin on skin. It's not going to happen. This music is sacred. It's sacred music that comes from playing it with your hands. And so I think that's a very important and really important central feature of the music of New Orleans and the music that I call home.
The band is Arturo O'Farrell and the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra. The album is called The Offense of the Drum. It is just out. They're playing Saturday night at the Apollo Theater. Arturo, to you and the band, thank you so much. You guys have sounded great. Thanks so much.
Just thank you for having us. It's been a privilege today.
There's more from our session with Arturo O'Farrell and the Afro-Latin Jazz Orchestra online. To hear the ALJO play a great piece of musical history, backwards musical history, called On the Corner of Malecon and Bourbon, just head over to soundcheck.org. Up next, the English pop band Squeeze is responsible for one of the catchiest pop tracks of the 80s, but as we'll hear, the song Tempted was not a hit when it was first released. Plus a new song from Squeeze co-founder Glenn Tilbrook. This is Soundcheck.
And now, Soundcheck looks back at the pop charts of yesteryear and asks,
that was a hit?
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
They're coming to take me away, haha.
Joining us for this week's edition of That Was a Hit is music writer and NPR music contributor Chris Melanfi. Chris, welcome back. Not your first time on this series.
Right.
But at your request or at your suggestion, we're turning the series on its head and calling it That Wasn't a Hit?
Right.
Why are we doing this?
When friends come over to my apartment and they look at my shelf of Billboard books that can list every hit they've ever had, the first thing they do is they pull a book off the shelf and they look up their favorite artist. And a good percentage of the time they go, wait a minute, how is this not a hit? You know, they'll flip to the page where the Pixies should be or the Smiths and say, the Smiths never had a Hot 100 hit. That's insane, you know. So I find that just as much of the time as people are marveling that these bizarre songs were hits, they're also marveling that these unbelievably catchy, wonderful songs that we consider gold now were not hits, often for bizarre reasons or inexplicable reasons. So I thought we should do the flip side of that was a hit.
Okay, so this wasn't a hit. What this are we talking about?
Well, we could have started with many different types of songs, but the one that I always bring up because it boggles my mind because it's such a catchy song is Tempted by Squeeze.
That song was everywhere.
You'd think that. Tempted by Squeeze, it's from their fourth album, East Side Story, famously an album produced by Elvis Costello. Elvis Costello actually sings a line in the song. It's a piece of blue-eyed soul, so it was a bit of a change-up for the band. They were, you know, a post-punk slash new wave band.
Mm-hmm. From England.
From England, fronted by the, you know, new Lennon-McCartney of Glenn Tilbrook and Chris Difford. They wrote a string of very catchy songs. They'd yet to break the charts in America, and they did actually break the Hot 100 with this song, but it peaked at an incredibly modest number 49.
Wow, so it didn't hit the top 40.
It didn't make the top 40. And it's their first American hit of any kind, which is also mind-blowing when you consider how many unbelievably catchy songs they had. I often say to people, the reason MTV had to come along and create the second British Invasion was because there was just such a wave of great British, not just rock, but pop, catchy songs. And these songs were not hits here. And Tempted is a signal example of that. This should have been a massive hit.
I can't believe it wasn't. I guess that's kind of the point.
Right.
The song is Tempted from 1981 by the band Squeeze.
I'm at the car park, the airport, the baggage carousel.
The people keep on grabbing.
Me and wishing I was well.
I said it's no occasion.
It's no story.
My bedside empty pocket, a foot without a sock. Your body gets much closer. I fumble for the clock, alarmed by the seduction. I wish that it would stop. Tempted by the fruit of another. Tempted, but the truth is discovered.
The song is Tempted by the band Squeeze, and it was not a hit in 1981. Chris Melanfi with us on Soundcheck and turning our series That Was a Hit upside down with a song that feels like a hit, sounds like a hit. I thought it was a hit. Why didn't it break the top 40?
It's anyone's guess. I mean, you know, you normally when a song like this isn't a hit in America, if you're an Anglophile pop fan like I am, you stick your nose up in the air and sniff. Well, at least the British have better taste than we do. It wasn't a hit in England either. It peaked at number 41 in England, which makes no sense. And by then, Squeeze had hits in England like Take Me, I'm Yours. You know,
the whole album Cool for Cats was just one catchy song.
One catchy song, Cool for Cats, was a hit. Up the Junction was a number two hit.
Yeah.
They'd had hits in England. For some reason, the British didn't cotton on to this either. I think it's because it was a change-up. This was the first and pretty much only album where the vocalist, the blue-eyed soul vocalist, Paul Carrack, sings lead. Paul Carrack is a strange character. He's basically sung on a slew of good pop records, and he rarely stays with a band very long. In the 70s, he had a huge hit here in America called How Long with the band Ace, and that reached number three on our charts. Later, in the mid-80s, he joined Mike Rutherford of the band Genesis and a band called Mike and the Mechanics. They had a top 10 hit with him singing lead called Silent Running. Later, they had a number one hit with him singing lead called The Living Years. So Paul Carrack has had hits. Bizarrely, this song, which I would argue is better than any of the ones I just ticked off, is the least of them on the charts, either here or in England.
And produced by Elvis Costello, who heard singing one of the lines in that verse.
The people keep on crying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that line is Elvis.
And he wouldn't have a top 40 hit for another couple of years either.
That's correct. I mean, yet again, another artist, you know, a great British artist who needed to break in America. His first top 40 hit in America was Every Day I Write the Book in 1983, which finally broke him into the top 40. Not very high. I think it made the mid-30s.
Mm.
He didn't even get into the top 20, I believe, until Veronica in the late 80s. So it took Elvis a while to break, too.
Is it all in that pretty little head of yours? What goes on in that place in the dark? I used to know a girl and I could have sworn that her name was Veronica. Well, she used to have a carefree mind of her own and a delicate look.
So if we're talking about Squeeze and Tempted and how that wasn't a hit,
right,
at what point does Squeeze actually get a genuine top 40 hit?
Here in America, they got it finally in 1987 with a song that is largely forgotten. It's a strange little ditty called Hourglass. It's not that strange, but it's strange that this is their breakthrough hit. It made our top 20, and it's pretty catchy. It's kind of a brain virus, if you will, where Difford and Tilbrook are singing these incredibly fast lines. This is an insult. I don't mean it to sound this ridiculous, but it's kind of like One Week by Bare Naked Ladies, 12 years before One Week. They're singing this chorus that goes, take it to the bridge, throw it overboard, see if it can swim, back up to the shore. And that was their breakthrough in America, pretty much toward the end of their fruitful period.
Yeah.
But yeah, all the great Squeeze songs, Black Coffee in Bed, Annie Get Your Gun, Pulling Muscles from a Shell, none of them were top 40 hits here.
Wow. Hourglass was, but as Chris Melanfi tells us, it was no Tempted. Chris, thank you for taking our series and wringing the juices out of it and turning it into something else.
My pleasure.
Chris Melanfi with us on Soundcheck. Glenn Tilbrook is one half of the songwriting duo that powered the band Squeeze. His new solo album called Happy Ending is due out in June, and Glenn just released a single from that album. Here's a bit of it. It's Glenn Tilbrook and a song called Everybody Sometimes.
With the affable patience of the ruling class, to one of their own who was compromised, regrettably take some time to atone, a decent period until it's exercised. Your place will always be with us, here in the warm water. Immerse yourself and it will all fade away. This time you may have come up short, but there'll always be another day. The place is awash with claim and counterclaim. You've done your bit and kept your head. With time this will all be just a memory soon.
That's a song called Everybody Sometimes by Glenn Tilbrook, founder of the band Squeeze. And that's from his upcoming album Happy Ending, due on June 6th. Tomorrow on the show, I'll talk with Al Jourgensen, founder of the seminal industrial band Ministry, and inside the documentary Narcocultura about the overlap between the music business and the drug trade in Mexico. Plus, live music from the indie band Speedy Ortiz. That's tomorrow. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.